I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to Two of the Think Tank. I am Andy.
And I'm Alistair George.
And this is the show. I'm so sorry. And this is the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm already throwing because normally when we record this, we sync ourselves up by counting down from 3 to 1 today. Alistair decided to start the count from 5 and include 0. and it has knocked me. I've been knocked for a hoop, whatever that means.
Well, let me just do a quick thing. The pod, we were on the Pod Spotter a few months ago, and one of the guys emailed me, said, "Hey, if you want to mention us on the show, you totally can do that." Well, we're doing it. It was a great episode. They just find fun podcasts. A lot of their podcasts have made it into Time Magazine's top 10 podcasts of the years. Not ours, but a lot.
No. Well, I mean, is it before or after appearing on the Pod Spotter? Because we could still just be waiting to slot right in there. I've been getting a lot of missed calls from the Time people, so maybe that's what they were trying to do. I don't call them back. I assumed it was a Man of the Year thing, and I thought, I don't need that. But if it's for the podcast, then
top ten
Men of the Year.
Because it's like there's no point getting that Man of the Year thing anymore because that you can just make up those magazines on the internet now.
Yeah, it's true. It's meaningless.
But top 10.
Back top before 10 Photoshop, podcast. There was only one way to get that, and it was by being Hitler. You know, now anybody can do it. It's like becoming a lord. You can just pay $5. To some sort of generator thing, and they'll do it to you. You can be Time Man of the Year.
A generator?
Yeah.
Just like a bit of electrical equipment.
Correct, yep. A gas-fired generator. Alistair, I wanted to talk... I mean, there must be a sketch in and around countdowns. You know, the rocket launch countdowns, that sort of thing. I mean... We hear a lot of these countdowns. It's a real trope. I don't know what the joke is.
But 2.5.
Yeah, that's one. True. that would
two,
be if
1.75.
They actually have to count down to give the rocket a deadline, and the rocket somehow has the mind of a toddler. So you need the rocket to blast off. And you're giving the rocket a limited amount of time to achieve blast off, but it's not getting there. But you realize that if you finish the countdown, then you've got to follow through on your ultimatum, right? Which is like no breakfast. I don't know. I would never tell my kid no breakfast. That sounds insane. But no raspberries on your breakfast tomorrow, right? But you don't want to actually get to the. You don't want to actually get to the count. To zero on the countdown, because
Andy, I think with punishments like that,
yeah,
you're gonna get Man of the Year on Time Magazine.
and
was a link to Hitler. I was linking you to Hitler.
Oh really? Oh, okay. I didn't get that. I just thought it was just something for my parenting being either good or bad. I couldn't tell which way you were going with it.
No, because the only person you mentioned who had got it somehow was Hitler.
Hitler. It's true. I am the Hitler of breakfast toppings. And I'm not afraid.
But that means what you're pushing, you're sort of like you're attempting, I guess, to push your particular brand of breakfast toppings. You know, you're telling everybody in your company, your breakfast toppings company, that you're gonna make a greater, you make this company great, right? And you're gonna expand. You're gonna expand into other breakfast topping companies.
Correct.
You're gonna You sort of do some takeovers, and you're you know, and then just so that you can, just so that every employee can have a bit more space to be a bit greater.
Yes. Everyone, I'm promising everyone in the company a slightly larger bench on which to sort their toppings.
But then in the process, you start a fight with all the other breakfast topping companies.
And it's a whole lot of trouble I don't need.
Yeah, but then I guess some would be on your side.
Well, yeah. For their own reasons, but I don't think I can rely on their allegiance in the long term. I've never understood what the long term. How on earth did Japan and Hitler, how did they even get in touch in the first place? And then, what was the end game for that relationship?
I guess
incredible.
Because I guess they would think that people would just stop fighting back at some point, right?
I guess, but then were they literally going to split the world in two? And
well, like with a bomb?
No, just draw a line, and Japan gets half the world, and Hitler gets half the world. Like, what was the strategic?
That was the deal. That was the deal, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, the old 50-50.
They're men of their word.
And they never would have met as well. There's no way Hitler ever met Hirohito. So what was... How did they have any kind of... I just don't understand how this went down. Anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe there was maybe it was just opportunism and there was no strategic dimension to the alliance. I have no idea. I should know.
You know... It's a proof. It's proof, though, that the secret doesn't work. You know, the secret that if you really want something, and you dream about it, then you'll get it. Because it didn't work for Hitler or the Japanese leader,
and they seem to really want it.
They seem to really want it. They, you know,
whatever Hitler it seemed was, to be
very angry in that scene in the movie.
yeah, he did in that scene in the movie. Alistair, I don't know if we've got anything so far, but can I tell you?
Look, I know this is almost nothing, but recreating World War II with breakfast cereal company, breakfast cereal topping companies.
Yes. Okay.
I don't know.
I mean, I think if I was a breakfast cereal company, I'd be mortified if someone came along and put toppings on it. I mean, you go to all this effort to make what you think is a good breakfast cereal, and then some fuckhead comes along and makes another company that says, oh, we'll take that breakfast cereal and we'll actually make it something that people want to eat. Here, we've got the icing on this sloppy cake.
Icing. Well, but if you're someone icing. Like breakfast icing, that's a good idea, Andy, right there. But I mean, if you're making Weet-Bix... You can't be expecting everybody's eating that plain, can you?
I guess you're right. What you're doing is you're supplying foundations. You know, if you were somebody making bricks in a brick factory, you wouldn't be disappointed when somebody made the roof out of something else, would you? You realize that you're just playing your part. You're just a cog in the thing.
But I could imagine if you were making, a Kellogg's Crunchy Nut.
Yeah.
You know, feels like you've attempted to balance the flavors, you know, to put the right amount of tiny little nut fragments and sugar coating and all that stuff. And then somebody comes in and squirts some tomato sauce on there or whatever.
Yeah. Tomato sauce breakfast. Really is the icing of the sausage. You know, it's the savory icing.
Yeah. What would you say is the candle of the sausage?
Here we go. This is deep. This is exactly where we're supposed to be, Alistair. And we're talking about sausages, and we're talking about things being the thing of the thing. what is the candle?
Sauerkraut?
Sausage. Yeah, I mean, it could be the onion. But like something, you know, ideally you'd want it to be something that you remove before you then go ahead and eat the item, right? So true. I guess the hand the tongs.
The tongs, you know? maybe the napkin that you hold under the sausage.
Of course it's the napkin. Very good, Alistair.
But cake
and
also
what I do,
has
I actually twist up the corner of it. Just the idea of putting candles on anything savory is already incredible. Candles on a sausage for your birthday. A sausage.
Sure, yeah.
There's no reason you can't make a sausage that starts out savory at one end, or is all meaty at the other end, and then by the time you get to the other end, is cake. You know, you can't.
Like a.
There's no reason you can't have a progressive sausage, with every part of the meal arranged along its length. Heston Blumenthal would do this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is to have spectrum foods, where
a three-course sausage.
You know, but like the idea that you start any two foods, right, at either end of this sausage.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And on either end, that food in its purest
You're
form.
Right. You're
but
right.
But in the middle, they're a perfect blend.
A perfect blend of cake and sausage.
You know, you might have to sort of inject them in a sort of twirly kind of, you know, double helix almost kind of thing.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, I like that a lot. They wrap themselves around each other.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Sort of kind of starting in a maybe like a bit of a yin-yangy looking thing at the center. And then they kind of go out into thicker thickness right at the end.
I was thinking though that like if you had a three-course sausage, the first course would have to be soup, which means that the sausage would have to have like a kind of a floppy, liquid-filled end, which I believe would be that you sort of burst the skin and bite into, and the soup bursts out into your mouth. And I imagine it would be one of the most disgusting experiences.
Well, it just depends on the soup, you know. You'll find the right soup for the right sausage, the right sausage skin. You know, sure. If it's just like
there's no right.
Think about this like a French onion soup. Kind of almost seems like it belongs inside a sausage.
I mean, I guess
you know, like if you made like a water balloon, a savory water balloon.
Yeah.
If made out of sort of sausage skin,
yeah,
it wouldn't be crazy to have French onion soup in there.
Mm.
That's what you would expect, you know,
that's what you'd expect.
Water balloon fight. a three
savory water balloon fight. Holds no surprises for me.
As it bursts
this is playing
over your
out
head.
Exactly as I expected. All right, Alistair, come on, let's write something down and get out of this conversation.
I've written three-course sausage.
Yeah, great. Can I say that, can I change the subject entirely and tell me whether or not you think this is any good? But it's a drug, right? And all it does is make you patient, right? So I figured this would be great in triage in hospitals where that you show up, right? And they triage people and they work out like what room you're supposed to, you know, where you're supposed to go in the queue basically in order to
and
like,
it makes
if
you're, you a
if
patient
your legs bleeding out
a
on the
patient
floor,
in that triage thing
you're a patient showing up and then they give you but well there's going to be confusion because of the word patient and patients but there's a drug that
great
makes
choice
you...
great choice of location to put this
well,
patient based sketch.
You're an inpatient, but you're impatient. You don't have a lot of patience, but even though you are one. And
Patience is not something that you're in.
And then they have a nurse who just gives you depending on how long you're going to have to wait,
is this,
they
is
give
this
you
a nurse who heals you or a nurse who breastfeeds you?
Or a nurse shark. I don't understand. They have a nurse, a medical nurse, an RN, a registered nurse, who injects you with, like, the first thing you get is a dose of a patient, P-A-T-I-N-C-E, and it's appropriate to how long you're going to have to wait, and you're just extremely good at waiting on account of this drug that you've been given. It's not an anesthetic. It doesn't knock you unconscious.
Mm.
It just makes you wait. Good at waiting calmly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not, it's not like it's drugging you out. You're not in some kind of blissful state.
Yeah. But you're also, you know, compared to how frustrated you might be if you're waiting in this triage waiting room.
Mm.
It might seem blissful in comparison, pardon me.
To your everyday life.
Well, I mean, I guess, no, but just if you're already getting frustrated and then they inject you in the neck.
Mm. Oh, straight in the neck.
But then why in the neck? That feels like that would get to you quicker.
Yeah.
When really, you'll have all the time in the world for it to kick in.
Well, no, you need it to kick in fast.
Okay.
So that you can then wait, right?
Fast acting.
Yeah, I think that...
patience pills.
I think if anything, they do the Pulp Fiction thing where they inject it straight into your heart.
Right.
It's done in a really, like, high-pressure way just to get the patience drug into you, and then after that they really can take their time.
Right.
Anyway,
I think that seems, yeah, look, that seems like something. I mean, it's hard that part once they're injected, you know.
What happens?
How does it proceed?
You're right.
Being really patient manifest itself as humor.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
he's being humorously reasonable.
Well, I think if somebody was really bad, we could find a way for somebody to be really badly injured. And then for whatever reason, they've ended up with too high a dose of the patient's drug. And they are just being incredibly reasonable, you know. And
I guess
the other thing is that you'd have to inject the entire family, right? If you get a lot of people coming in, it's not going to work just to inject the patient. You have to inject, probably, first of all, you inject the parents. Because they're going to be quite pushy otherwise, trying to get their child seen to.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe it just come out as a kind of a gas, gets squirted when you come through the door. Anyway.
You give it to people without their consent.
That's right. Yes, you do. I think it could be good anywhere. It would probably be something that is then rolled out all sorts of places.
Well, I mean, if it's like fluoride, maybe you could just put it in the water.
Right. Yeah.
Is there any downside to everybody being a bit more patient?
I can't think of one. I mean,
you'd have to have a televised philosophical debate about it, I guess.
Yeah. There might also be a version of a sketch about this where it is just comes down entirely to somebody trying to promote this drug and then getting endlessly caught up in people asking them questions about what kind of the word patient they mean. And then them losing their minds, maybe.
Oh. Mm. I mean,
totally insane.
Yeah, I think that could be good. But what is insanity really? It's probably impatience.
Yep. I mean, I think you can have probably any emotion you could have. Can you have any emotion to the point of psychosis? And, impatience is certainly one of them. I don't think you could be calm to the point of psychosis.
Maybe. I guess no, because calmness is kind of feels like it's like the absence of thoughts and stuff.
Yeah. I feel like, it's if anyone like Buddha would have had that, and I don't think he was psychotic. Maybe he was and we just couldn't tell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if they're an extreme version of something, it feels like, you know, it's probably bad. I think maybe not enough people are frowning upon what the Buddha did.
Is there a sketch to be had about a kind of a militant
Andy,
group of very
getting,
calm
this
people?
Is getting, this is getting unbelievably close to a drug that makes people patient, you know what I mean? Like it's another one of those things where we couldn't find the humor in the actual being patient thing.
Mm.
And so I don't know if we can find the humor in being really calm. It's like, I mean, not that I, you know, I don't want
to
criticize.
No, Alistair,
like
I think it's good that we're not even trying, that we don't have the patience to even consider whether an extremist group of calm people would work. You're probably right, Alistair.
No,
I
think it's just because I feel like I have tried to write sort of the extremist like reasonableness and things like that.
And it just ends up boring, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem with today.
People probably can do it, but I just can't.
It's the problem with the discourse today, Alistair, is that nobody's interested in being calm. Apparently it's not interesting or cool or edgy to be, you know, reasonable. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. People apparently think that that's not sexy.
Yeah, now, to be excessively sexy, you know, militantly sexy.
Now that's something.
Now that's something. Yeah, but I mean, again, look, it's not my forte though. You know, it's not like figuring out what a candle is on a sausage.
No, that's where we belong.
But I, you know, just briefly going back to candles on sausages.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like savory foods would have candles, but they might move up the chain somewhat in the pyrotechnics that they would have on them.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. No, it feels very reasonable that they would be smeared with some kind of like a napalm type gel or whatever it is that they put on the arms of people at Warner Brothers Movie World Hollywood on the Gold Coast for some kind of stunt show.
Yeah, and the whole inside of your mouth is covered in it as well.
Yes,
and so that the sausage is on fire, and then inside of your mouth is on
Alistair,
fire, and you're eating.
You know, we've talked about things that can cook
in a
food
show.
As it goes into your mouth, right? We've talked about a little sort of a blast oven ring type thing that you hold in front of your mouth, and you can pass an uncooked sausage through it, and then as it emerges on the other side, it's cooked.
I'd like to think birds could drop them from the sky into your open mouth and they would cook and you would swallow them. And
perfect. But we have never talked about lining the mouth first in some sort of flame proof coating, but then in a layer of flammable coating and turning the mouth essentially into a wood fired oven.
Well, it's already a sort of a space in which airflow is controlled. You know, that's
already
the main thing about a wood-fired oven or a fired oven of some sort.
It's a sort of a closed cavern with an opening. Yes, the tongue is already, you know, basically a retractable oven tray.
A serving. You know, it's a tong. It's an oven tray. It's everything. It's ready to accept. It's ready to deliver out. It's ready to rearrange, you know, so that the food on the inside gets the best heat distribution.
I think that we could turn over the entire mouth and nose sort of sinus, nasal cavity region, that entire thing over turn it into a specialized cooking facility. And then we'd only need to drill a couple of holes either in the neck or maybe through the back of the head to allow air in and out for breathing.
You don't need a whole mouth
for breathing. The mouth seems wasted on breathing, basically.
So you don't think you could use the nostrils or the front mouth hole to allow the air in? Or do you think you would have to get a perfect seal for the cook?
I would want a perfect seal, and I also think that there'd be
even when it's a flame-based cooking system?
Are you thinking about adding
something electric? Or
I like to be able to get a bit of a smoke going, you know, turn it into like that kind of thing. But I think that you want to be able to control that, but you want it to be independent of breathing. You see, breathing has to happen, right? But that's going to interfere with your cooking if you're constantly having to open your mouth, breathe in and out, you know, getting cool or hot air, you know, stoking that furnace. I want to reserve my control of the mouth and nose, which I think could be quite useful for getting an additional kind of circulatory flow into your cook. I want to be able to reserve that for my cooking purposes, and then I'm going to sort of basically close off the windpipe and use a separate... a new opening.
It feels silly that breathing. We have to use the mouth. It feels like the lungs should be able to just attach to something, either that we hook to our back or to our front, that could just do a lot of that work for us, so that choking is entirely off the table, and so that
this,
you can
of
also...
course, we've actually we've solved the problem of choking.
Yeah, and then also the problem of being able to seal your mouth shut at nighttime and get a good hickory slow cook of a slab of meat of some sort.
Just imagine, you're in a darkened room, and somebody opens their mouth, and you just see that dull glow of the coals in there. It'd be so beautiful, on a first date you just want to stoke those coals, baby.
Yeah, you go get your sort of fire poker in here, and then you put your tongue in, which is also coated in, I guess, sort of heat treated steel.
And then we could use the tongue, now it makes sense that cutlery is made of metal, because we can use it to sort of stoke and turn the food as it cooks in the mouth.
A lot to think about.
a lot of good ideas there.
Yeah. I've written down
it's,
mouth oven.
It's not going to get fresher than that.
Freshly mouth cooked. I mean, I guess if you could be growing the food in your mouth as well.
Yeah, but I don't think that increases the fresh... Oh, I guess, you know, you're right. It does. It is then
It's grown,
fresh.
Cleaned, and prepared in the mouth.
Does cooking kind of reset the freshness of food?
I always feel that that happens, yeah, because if something's almost off, you cook it and then you get another week out of it. This almost rancid food, I could now leave on the stove overnight.
It's not like it's better. It's not like you know. You probably still want to eat fish.
It's a new lease on life. This food gets.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be. It used to be a sort of a, you know, a. A capsicum or a pepper that has been in the crisper for so long that it's started to produce wetness.
it's returning to its watery.
It's returning to its water form.
God, I go through so much of that stuff. Things that are still in plastic bags in some way that just turn to pure fluid. Oh. What is going on?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's just, you know, the cell walls have given up.
Yeah.
And it's just,
we're not getting
back
out of here, man.
The only way we're going to make a big escape is through by becoming smaller, by becoming individual atoms.
Or it's becoming liquid like Alex Mack. Maybe they're thinking that they can turn into a fluid, drip out the bottom of the door, and then reform into a celery on the other side.
Well, I never understood what Alex Mack's power was, but she's the power of a rotting vegetable.
Yeah, she has the power of bean sprouts.
Yeah.
What is the point of bean sprouts? You know, bean sprouts are like the biggest source of salmonella, and yet I've never eaten bean sprouts and been like, oh yeah, bean sprouts. Like, they don't, there's nothing that's good enough about them. They don't bring enough to the table to justify the fact that they go bad so quickly and make you incredibly sick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've never got sick from them. There's some of these things that people say, like, you know, that it's like, you know, like rice.
You can't eat rice. You can't eat rice even 15 minutes after you've cooked it. It goes bad that quickly.
Next day, and you go, oh. Right. I'm sure that there's some truth to this, but
even if you keep it in the fridge. Yeah, you're right. You can't.
Oh, if you keep it in the fridge, it's even worse.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, right. Well, that's, I mean, I'm like, basically my whole diet is like 3-4 day old rice.
And, and I've always been fine. And
I've always been
fine.
And
I'm pretty sure that a lot of the people in, you know, I'm going to say,
Asian, what are you gonna say, Andy?
Type countries, Asian countries.
Okay. Why?
Might have been eating rice, you know, maybe even before the invention of refrigeration might have been eating
one of the whole points of fried rice is that you have to use old rice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But it's but how do you get the old rice? Yeah, you're exactly right. Maybe it's got to be made old. Maybe that's the reset, the famous reset, where you get a little bit more time out of the rice by frying it again. You know?
Yeah, but I think I even read they were like, and cooking it again doesn't help. They're like, oh,
throwing it in the bin and moving house, that's not going to save you. That's not going to save you. It's going to come for you. That movie, The Ring, that was really a metaphor for rice.
For rice and how you're going to die from eating it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something in this rice thing.
We get told a lot of like, don't you dare eat rice that's even a little bit old. But I feel like everything then must have some sort of threshold. Every food must have a different threshold, obviously, where you can't eat it anymore. But we don't hear about any of the others. There's so much hype and scaremongering around the rice. But I think a lot of other stuff is slipping in under the radar. You know, pasta. How long can I wait before I eat pasta? Nobody's once mentioned to me how long you can wait.
There must be an amount of time, right?
There must be an amount of time. It's never once been mentioned because everyone's so busy telling me not to eat old rice. Meanwhile, I'm eating 3-4-week-old pasta. I'm like, at least I'm not touching that day-old rice.
You know, and people always put, you know, like McDonald's burgers in a cupboard for 4 or 5 months or whatever like that under a glass, you know, glass bell, right, or whatever.
Bell jar, yep.
Bell jar. And then they tell you, look at what happens after 6 months. But I've never seen anybody do that with any other food.
No.
And so I got no comparison. It's the bell jar. It could be bell jars. They're just great at keeping in freshness.
Mm.
I don't know what the sketch is, though.
Any of this, anything?
No, Andy, I don't know.
Yeah. How about this, right?
Yeah.
Peeing on lemon trees. Right? Yeah. Everyone always says you got to pee on lemon trees. But I've never heard this from an official source. So I don't know.
Yeah.
And it feels like a sort of rumor that could have been made up by somebody who just dislikes lemon trees.
Because it feels like the logical next one is pooping on chocolate trees, right? Like, that's what it is. No, you got to poop on cocoa trees. That really helps them.
Well, yeah, it is. It feels like the most like naive form of, well, there's yellow juice comes out of these lemons. We better put yellow juice onto the ground. I have some yellow juice. And I'm going to spray it around.
Yeah, like cloudy apple juice. If you want to make that, it's just an apple tree that you added some milk to.
You just cloudy apple juice. It's just if you've got a urinary infection of some kind and your urine is cloudy, you've got to pee on cloudy apple juice trees.
Cloudy apple juice trees.
Yeah, correct. I don't. Sorry to make everything about urine. You were trying to get us away from that towards milk. And that was very valid.
Well, I was just trying to add it.
You've got to go out there and lactate onto. You got to squeeze some of your boob.
That's what makes it cloudy.
Milk, yeah, onto the apple tree.
Andy, we're crumbling somehow.
We are.
But I do like the idea how somebody dispelling the myth, being completely against this idea that lemon trees. You pee on lemon trees and it's good. Look, I'm going to write it. Peeing on lemon trees.
Yeah. Like
is a myth.
Like if say there was a, it feels like you would become, you know, a Greek god, right? Once upon a time, turned somebody into a lemon tree. And then also created the myth that you've got to pee on lemon trees so that this person would be pissed on for all eternity. You know?
Yeah, that does feel like that would be something that they would do and say.
But that would, for that to occur, the Greek god would have to keep it a secret that that was what was really going on. And that doesn't seem like the way myths work. There are no secret myths, you know? God didn't do any, like, did God do anything that we haven't heard about? You know?
Oh, he must have done at least one thing. Yeah. Like, or is he like, you know, like an influencer who has to record every little bit of his life? Like, there must be, you know, I guess in a sane world he would have. There'd be heaps of miracles all the time.
And there'd be individual. You know, people are praying to him all the time, so he must be acting in those people's lives, you'd assume. And, like, certainly that's not all documented in an official biblical text, but it feels like up to a certain point, we wrote down everything that God did, and everything that's in the Bible is the complete record of... Is that... I reckon a theologian would know about this. They'd be able to tell us, oh, no...
Yeah, there what were percentage? Heaps of things. What percentage of stuff did they write down? Do you reckon?
Is there anything in the Bible where it's just like, and then God did a bunch of other stuff that we don't have the details of?
There we must heard be. I don't know. Look,
there were, and then he did another 50 miracles, 50 assorted miracles, and we just
and
don't.
We can't go into those. It would be too long to tell you everything good that he did. Or do they kind of pick and choose which are the miracles that you learn, people will learn the most amount from? So maybe like God also does a bunch of useless miracles that are actually not, you know, like, you know, if you have a fish and you lost your fish, he'll put a bell on your fish. But, you know, there's actually 50 reports of that, but they didn't bother putting it in when they were editing.
The bells don't really work underwater. And bells then God don't really, but has to apologize. They work a bit. is it publication bias? And
well, there's gotta be.
God did a bunch of miracles that really didn't come off, but so they just didn't. They weren't documented. It's very possible that God does work by trial and error, and
Oh yeah.
You know,
and then only the successful ones and they write down.
Yeah. God,
like those guys who shoot basketballs from really far away and then only keep the ones they do those trick shot YouTube channels.
Yeah, you know, right.
They just like throw a toothbrush in it, you know, as they're walking out the room and then it lands in the thing and then they just keep the take that they got. That's what the Bible is.
Alistair, you've ruined TikTok for me.
Well, I know, but
I thought they were doing that first time every time.
No, but that's God. God is just doing trick shots. You know?
Yes.
Maybe they did feed 5,000 people with a couple of fish and a loaf of bread, but it just happened to be on that day, everybody was only just a very little bit peckish.
Tiny bit hungry. Yeah, most of them had eaten beforehand because they had heard that they'd heard that this guy doesn't cater very well.
Yeah.
Last time I was there, literally, it was like two fish. So there were a lot of people there. So everyone, line your belly, and then you get there, and he's only got a couple of fish again. It's a miracle. Everyone's happy.
I mean, it just seems like. I haven't gone deep into that story, but it feels like really somebody's dreaming for a miracle there is really, you know, because they're telling us in it that they've only got a few bits of fish and a little bit of bread. And then they're saying, well, everybody was full. You go, well, that doesn't seem likely. You said you only got a couple of bread. Like, wouldn't the miracle come in the quantity of food?
Yeah, you're right. Why? And if you're trying to say it's a miracle, then why not say he had no fish? And no bread.
And exactly. Everyone and then was everybody full. Was full.
Like, why some food?
Yeah, well, why a little bit?
He had slightly less food than you'd think would be enough to go around, but it turned out okay.
He had heaps left. I mean, he had heaps less.
Yeah, I know.
And it turns out it was great. We're actually, you know, that sounds like people are lying for you.
How would you actually accurately... I don't think you asked every one of those 5,000 people if they actually were feeling full as well. That's all I'm saying. Biblical scholars, Alistair, we should do a podcast where we read the Bible for the first time.
That's a good idea, Andy.
Thank you.
I do have an illustrated version of Genesis.
Illustrated? The original illustrations? Did God do the drawings? Did God describe them?
No, it's it's by Crumb.
Oh wow, okay.
But I think he said he just took it as a straight illustration job, like he wasn't trying to make it sexy or funny or anything like that.
Mm.
So, but you know, we could start reading it that way. I think it's got all the words in it.
Yeah. Well, if it's got all the words in it, we absolutely could. We could call it. First test, and it's our first test of the First Testament. And then,
I mean, there's a podcast that will just get so many listeners. Al and Andy start reading the Bible.
I think it could.
Yeah,
I think
all
it
right.
could. Why are you laughing at that idea? Like, that is a laughably bad idea. Like, an obviously laughably bad idea for a podcast. Look at the shit that succeeds as podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't understand your criteria. Andy, so I don't know what you want from me.
No, Andy, you know what? Upon rethinking about it, it's an okay idea. But I want to do it. I want you to know that I want to do it.
It's an okay idea if it'll get you to shut up.
No,
it's
exactly
as good an idea as will get you to shut up, Andy.
Andy, I also want you to know that just because I don't necessarily think something is a great idea straight away doesn't mean that I won't do it.
I won't commit
years
to doing it. 268 episodes or something. 267 today.
Is that one for each?
It's a lot.
Part. Andy, we've got five sketch ideas, so we got a
incredible and they're all
suggestion.
They're all good.
We got a suggestion from a listener.
Ah.
You know how some of our listeners can donate $3 to our Patreon and they can
this is the first I'm hearing of it, but I love
it. Well, this listener is only called one.
The word one?
Yeah, the word one, but it's the word of the number one.
Wow.
Yeah. So one has given us three.
Okay.
And you're going to have to tell me what one of the meanings of one of these ones is, yeah, or I can look it up while you're guessing the first one.
Okay. Well,
do you want to guess what the first word is?
Yeah, corrugated.
No, but you got the second half of the word correct.
Aided.
Eh?
Is, yeah, it the aided?
Yeah.
Wow.
Inflated. Agitated.
Agitated. Great. Okay.
All right. Parmesan? Second word. What's that?
Parmesan?
No.
Yeah.
No, but it does end with an I-N, so it's kind of a similar sound. This one is gubbins.
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 G-U-B-B-I-N-S?
Which, yeah.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, it means miscellaneous items or paraphernalia or a gadget.
Really?
A little gubbins he had made as a boy.
I love it. Agitated gubbins.
It's making me think that one now is probably supposed to be, is probably British, right? And
oh, it's me gubbins.
And yeah, it's me gubbins.
Oh, a pocket full, like, of gubbins.
And that one probably refers to, like, well, one shouldn't do that.
The royal one. Yes.
Yeah, the royal one. And the third word, do you want to guess?
Agitated gubbins collector.
Bulge.
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 Incredible. This does feel like what we were talking... Were we talking about this on the podcast or somewhere? About just dad, a pocket full of dad stuff? Just how, yeah, at the end of the day?
I think that was either last episode or it was a Patreon exclusive.
Ah, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was for our German compound words.
Ah, yes. But, you know, my sons are very into making little things and telling me what they are, making little gadgets and weird doohinkies and wrapping things around things and just stretching sticky tape everywhere in the house, and then it's some sort of contraption. And it's exactly what I would have done were I in their position. I used to be obsessed with building tiny boats and rafts and things
putting them on flowing water.
Paddle pop sticks. Yep. A lot of that. I used to always want to put an electric motor on them, but never had any of the ability to do that. And I barely had the ability to make the...
And I imagine a lot of those things wouldn't have floated with an electric motor on them.
No. I think it would have short circuit. Would have been bad.
And probably the sort of the, you know, the... Like the direction and stuff and how good it would have been to actually, you know, drive your thing and how stable and...
Oh, there'd be all sorts of...
Probably saved your parents a pretty pence by not doing that.
By not following through, not achieving any of my dreams. I think really, you know, when I set out to become an electrical engineer, it was just as a result of like pent-up frustration with my inability to put little electric motors on weird things that I'd made. And having done engineering for 6 years, I came out of it, and I don't think I ever put a little electric motor on anything. And I still haven't to this day.
I became an engineer just because I was Donatello, and Donatello was the guy who invented things. And the closest thing to an inventor was an engineer. So...
Yeah, no, that was part of my motivation as well. But you know what would be cool?
Yeah.
Would be a set of like kids' toys of some kind, which do allow them to connect motors to just any old shit. You know, anything you want now, you can put a motor on it, right? Like it's a motorized thing. There's a watertight battery compartment that plugs via a series of plugs into a motor, and you can get different like sort of articulations for the motor, so you can change its angle and that sort of thing. And then you can put different little propellers on there, and it's all waterproof, and you can just stick it onto anything. And then now anything can be a boat.
I think anything's that's a great
a boat.
Idea.
You got a shoe, you got a boat. You got a bottle, you got a boat. You got a boat, you got a boat. Anything.
Well thinking can be about for it's a great kids' toy idea, Woody.
Thanks.
Andy. God, my God, I use your name on my son. I use my son's name on you. I saw my mother not that long. I kept accidentally calling her darling.
Yeah, I've done that to my mum as well. I called her my love. She loves it.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing.
It's not good though. It's not what you want.
It's not what you want.
As a man.
A clear separation. It's what you want. Is a clear separation. Look, this is what I'm thinking about agitated gubbins bulge, Andy, is that, you know, we're not that far away from sort of technologically enhancing our bodies and becoming a bit more cyborgian.
Yes.
Right? Probably, you know, much like your idea, we'll just be putting a lot of propellers on ourselves.
Yes.
Right? Propellers will be coming out of various things so that, you know, maybe on the back of your arms near the elbow. So that you could just sit in water instead of going swimming. You could just sit in water and turn on two propellers behind your arms, and you could just sit and being great. Instead of be pushed through the water.
Yeah.
Like that.
Nobody's doing this. Nobody's providing this for me. I want to be able to just lie back. Like, this is you see how cool it is for people who are skateboarding when they've got those electric skateboards and they've got that little remote control in their hand and they're just hooning around, having the time of their lives. I want that, but with little propellers on the bottom of my feet. I want to be just lying back in a pool on my back so I can't see where I'm going, and I want to be driving around.
Yeah, and maybe a little propeller on the back of your head to keep your head out of the water so you don't have to sort of hold your neck real tense like that.
Sure.
Right? You know, and then there'll be various things like that. There'll be little...
People would abuse this. Because you know, people would use this for disposing of bodies. They just strap a couple of little propellers to a dead body, put it in the water, and then just drive it out to international waters where it's no longer a crime to have killed them.
It's your kid's toy idea suddenly used. You're like the guy who invented TNT. You know?
Yeah.
Suddenly
it
you
a
were,
kid's
you
toy.
Know, it was initially it was just for, you know, on clogging things really, but then suddenly it got used as a weapon. And this is the same thing with the little propellers. Anyway, so then there'd be other little gadgets all over your body. You know, one would be a little thing for cooking dim sum or whatever. You know, just on your chest or whatever. And a little steamer on one side, a little deep fryer on the other. And, you know, there'll be little computers and stuff. Anyway.
Wood-fired pizza in your mouth.
What we'll discover very quickly is there's a lot of these... additions will probably actually be quite irritating to the body, and there will be a quite a reddish, quite agitated area around each one of these things. Mostly, you know, partially from the heat they all produce, and then the other will be because of the inflammation that they just cause due to
the body rejecting being
things that the body's trying to reject them. But I guess we'll have some variously, you know, various amounts of depth to the anchors and hooks that we put into the body to stop that from happening.
Every time people talk about transhumanism and cyborgs and, you know, becoming like a better version of the human, they never seem to address the idea of inbuilt obsolescence and the fact that like every single piece of technology is designed to go obsolete within 2 years. I don't want that in my brain. I don't want to have to get another surgery. I don't want my hand to stop working, my arm to stop working because they stopped making the software. Or the company that made my arm went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And now I can't use my arm because my arm has to be connected to their servers.
Yeah.
It's
your brain has a software update and suddenly it doesn't recognize.
Oh man!
And your body parts, and you've got like a job, you know, a job application to go to.
You want to go to the toilet, right? But you're about to take down your pants, but then both your arms start installing updates, and you can't use your arms for the next half an hour arms are just the progress, just downloading stuff and configuring things. And so you're running around with these dead arms trying to take your pants off, scraping them off, I guess, against a window ledge. So you can get it done in time.
I think the reality of cyborg hell is a great place to go, because I think I haven't seen that much stuff about just how uncomfortable it would be to be a cyborg.
Just annoying.
They always just try annoying. To pass it off like they're not there. Like, but I just don't imagine that they're going to get past the basics of discomfort.
Inflammation. It's bad.
Yeah.
Nobody wants Andy, that.
I'm going to take us through the sketch ideas. We have breakfast cereal topping company, World War II analogy.
Great. Sorry, my mind is wandering because I'm just trying to think of some sort of inflammation information pun, like sure. Too much inflammation or something like that.
Inflammation superhighway. Yeah.
Inflammation superhighway, that's what you would be on with your cyborg body.
And then we got the three-course sausage.
Yes. Back to the sausage ideas.
And then as well as with the possibility of also a spectrum sausage, which is a sausage that is two separate foods at each end. And then we have fast-acting patience drug. Then we got the mouth oven, another great product here, where it allows you to cook things.
What you would line the mouth with. I guess some like bubbles, some kind of bubbles. I think would do it.
Yeah, some kind of bubbles, maybe. But maybe it could also just be like. You know, one of those like gloves that a glass blower would use.
Sure, but in your mouth.
You know,
yeah.
Sort of like a Kevlar-y type thing. Yeah, carbon fiber. And then we've got the peeing on lemon's tree is a myth.
A great myth.
And we got God's unwritten down miracles. Sort of shitter ones, because he's just a trial and error guy. And then the cyborg reality is hell, which is from One. These are based on One's ideas.
Thank you very much, One.
Thank you very much.
One.
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 What fun.
What fun, Andy. I think we started losing energy, but anyway. Boo-doo, boo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo,
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. God, we love that you did that. That was a good thing that you did just then. We hope
you
enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed it. And
we did enjoy it. And we did. That's no lie.
You can listen to us on Podspotter. I'll try and remember to put the link in the show notes.
And you can find us wherever you get podcasts, the Two in the Think Tank. And you can find us on Twitter at Two in Tank, and also on Instagram at Two in Tank. I'm at Alistair TB on Twitter.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
You can review us. You can support us on Patreon. Get all that extra Patreon bonus content. We'll probably have to start doing teleport improvise things while we work up to finish off that show for next year's Comedy Festival. Oh, this year's Comedy Festival.
I'm excited.
So we'll start doing those. There's all the old ones for Magma that we were just us figuring it out or riffing a bit as partially as the characters.
Totally for me. I was totally in character the whole time.
Yeah.
Even when I was accidentally calling you Alistair.
That's great. Well, thank you for listening. And
we
love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.